Thank you. Where I come from, people in AA call me John the Indian. That's not the reason why I'm an alcoholic. Although I still have a reservation. That's one of my intellectual jokes. I suppose you cannot help but to feel grateful being here this weekend. And Kathy and I, we like to thank the committee because this is a special weekend for us. There's something very special about the setup you have here. To be able to walk in the beach and to meet people who seem to be happy and have a lot of fun. And we came with a friend. I sponsor one of those executives. They're the hardest nuts to crack. He's a computer executive. So he organized our trip. We came on a train. Because we couldn't get horse and buggy. And we left yesterday morning at 7 o'clock on a train, and we arrived in Wilmington, I think, at 2:30 in the afternoon. And there was a car waiting for us. Like I said, he'd organized everything, and we arrived here last night at 5 o'clock, and people were waiting for us for dinner. So we went on a dinner, and we had just had time to arrive here for a meeting. And I'm glad we made it, because I have not heard Ray before, and I know you enjoyed him, and I certainly did. But I was sitting so far back, I didn't know what he looks like. And I went over, shook hand to the wrong guy tonight. And by the time I went home, I was so contented and I was so happy, I didn't want anything more but sleep. But I just put on a television, and then there was a picture of Custard Last Stand. So, of course, I had to stay up for a couple hours. I didn't want to miss anything. But seriously, what makes it so special? I think that any man should be proud sitting here in a head table. You know, I was thinking about tonight how I felt when I first was invited to come here. I was in my late 20s. And a fellow who came to see me was an Indian fellow. I have once met him before in Tupper Lake, New York. I never knew him, but he knew my father. So he brought me to his home. I was in Skids. I lived in Skid Row for 7 years. I left the next day, and I didn't see him until one night he walked into a mission where I was. He lost his home, his wife, she was a nurse. He lost his new automobile, lost his job. And he became a bum like myself. He got sober in Salvation Army in Syracuse, New York, and someone said to him, there is another Indian in the mission, and he really looks like he needs help. So I walked in one night. He asked me if I remembered him, and I said I did. He said, I am now a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I said, good for you. God's bum is always joining something. And he says, I came here to bring you to a meeting. And you know, I didn't know what he was talking about. I felt maybe it was one of those religious meetings, because I go to religious meetings like in Salvation Army or in a mission when I needed a bed. But I've already had a bed. So I didn't want to come to AA. Besides, I have been sober about 3 weeks. And, you know, when I drink in the street for a couple of months. And by the time I stop drinking, I don't look too healthy. I have always suffered from wine sores, and I have long hair. I'm dirty. And I didn't know it then until in my recovery, I've learned that I'm a very sensitive person. I get hurt easily, and I don't suffer well. And I don't want people to see me when I look like this. So I said, I don't want to go to a meeting. And I said the magic word. He said, but they have coffee and donuts, and they're free. So I said, we'll go. So I walked into the central group in Syracuse, New York, where you meet people like you have here. Now, I was 28 years old. And I walked into my first AA meeting, and in central group in Syracuse, New York, there was a lawyer who had been sober 13 years. And every Friday night, he would stood at the door, and he would shake hands to everyone who came to that meeting. And of course, as I was walking through the doors of AA, he came to me, and he grabbed my hand with his two hands, and he says to me, am I so glad to see you? And I wasn't glad to see him at all. And I sat down, and with a coffee, and my first speaker in AA was a lady judge. And she confused me from the time she opened her mouth, because she said, if you are new, please try to identify. Well, here I am. I'm 28 years old. I have been away from my reservation, where I was born in Canada. At the age of 14, I spent 4 years in CC camp in Patton, Maine, lumber camp, washing dishes. When I was 18, I joined the Canadian Infantry, where I spent 3.5 years washing more damn dishes. I took a drink at the age of 21, and I've been in skits for 7 years, and here I am in an AA meeting. I have never been married, never had a driving license, never owned a car. I couldn't read and write. With long hair and wine sores. And I'm in a mission, supposed to pay 35 cents a night, and I'm behind 3 weeks rent. You know, I have financial problems. And listening to Lady Judge telling me, try to identify. And it isn't that I have never met a judge before. You know, I met one judge 43 times, and he never once asked me to try to identify. And I'm confused. So the years has gone by. And I was thinking about sitting here with all these people that night made me so uncomfortable. I would have never believed if someone told me that a man like me stopped drinking would be invited to come to a place like this to sit in a table. You know, I still don't talk good English, but it doesn't bother me anymore. First 2 years in AA, I wouldn't speak because I'm a sensitive person. But you know, you get all your in AA, you always find people to help you with a problem. I met a person in AA and told me that there was a group in our area where all the professional people go there. They use big words. He said I should go there and listen to them. So I decided I would, because I wanted to speak and I wanted to, you know, make some sense. I went there for 1 year listening to those people. And the only thing I find out at the end of the year, they were as crazy as I was. and I met couple I felt were educated beyond their intelligence. And it made me feel belong there. But I think that's what program so special. I was telling Ed, I don't read too well, but I can read, and I was reading that prayer. As a matter of fact, I almost asked him to read it for me because it fit everything that we have here this evening. I think there AA makes is a special program to allow a person like me to sit down here and not to feel that I don't belong here, to be able to enjoy the spirit, to be able to enjoy other people, to be able to recognize and feel the strength that comes by understanding and accepting each other for who we are. It's a very special feeling. The only bad thing about this conference, I think, that we have to leave tomorrow. And when you feel bad leaving, that means that you have a good time. But I was brought up in a little reservation in Canada. My father, when he died, he had a half a gallon of jug under his bed. We lost 8 members in my family in 5 years, including my twin brothers, and they all died with TB. My mother died with TB when I was 13. And I had a lot of fears because I was afraid of death. I felt that I was treated like if I had TB, and I was afraid. I remember waking up my mother early one morning because I was sleeping with her. I couldn't sleep because when I have fears, I become obsessed person. I've learned that in a program. And I was obsessed. I couldn't sleep. And I asked my mother if I was going to die too. And she said, no, that I was very strong. And she was very proud because I never cried. And after my mother died, I couldn't find a home. I think that I don't think that my people rejected me. I think I have always had the type of a state of mind where I looked and found this feeling of rejection. And I found it. I remember I was cutting wood. What I did in reservation is to work so I can be fed. And I cut wood, and a lady gave me a dinner, and he broke the dish after. That's what the kid told me. That's where I get the idea that I was rejected. So I stayed in reservation for another year. I stayed in an old house. Just had 2 mattresses with a dog. And when I was 14, I left the reservation. My people talk about lumber camps in Maine. So I went to Patton, Maine. And I asked if I could get a job in lumber camp. But the fellow said that I was too young. But they needed a dishwasher 26 miles in the woods. And he said if the Canadian, the world, Second World War took most all the younger people and they needed a dishwasher. And I went and in the camp and I got a job. I met a man by the name of Bill Langster who became a good friend. He would brought me to his home 2 or 3 times a year. And I stayed with him for 4 years. And it was his family who suggested one Sunday that I should leave the lumber camp. They wanted me to join the younger people. And I thought it was a good idea because I was 18 years old and I wanted to go back home, but I wanted to go back home with feeling of being somebody. And I thought the uniform would give me that feeling where I would show my people now I am grown and a soldier. What I didn't know was that In Canadian Army, if you don't have an education, they wouldn't allow you to go on training. If had I known that, I would have never joined, because I am not necessarily what you call a patriotic person. You know, I was well enough to know that this country was ours before it was yours. I was hoping maybe I can win a medal without getting hurt, because I'm a very sensitive person, and I don't suffer well. And, you know, in our recovery, we are taught, among other things, about faith. And AA identifies it as the spirit of independence. Those who believe in themselves are not necessarily looking something from other people. It's good to know that. What I didn't know was that I like washing dishes in lumber camp, but in the Army, it told me something, that I become obsessed again, and that I wasn't as good as the next person, and I didn't know how to deal with it. I don't think that most young people would go out of their way to tell lies about themselves. I think most people know that lie represents a dishonor. It removes the trust and respect of who you are, and it comes from your own words. But I think this feeling of wanting to belong for a person like me, it's something that I've always suffered from. It told me that I wasn't as good as the next person, and I started to tell lies about it. I didn't go home. I didn't want my people to know I was washing dishes. I didn't even go out with a girl, and I was old enough to know I should. You know, I'm sick, not stupid. And I didn't like Canadian Army. I got my discharge when I was 21 years old with a friend. And he says to me, "What do you say, you and I, dressed up, and there is a place we could go. We have a few drinks, and we'll meet some girls." So we each bought a suit, and we went to the Bluery Cafe in Montreal in the third floor. And as you're walking in, there's a four-piece orchestra playing, and right in front, there's a girl singing, practically with no clothes on. And I think that's where I received my first spiritual experience. And the second one is I took a drink. Now, my wife, Kathy, and I, you know, we met in AA 23 years ago. Kathy and I, my wife's been sober almost 23 years. And we do speaking together a great deal in our area. And she always said that she's the type of person should have never taken a drink. And of course, because I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, and because I have been given all this understanding and insight about myself, I believe that I am that type of person. I became an alcoholic the night I took my first drink. But I'm also a type of person who needed a drink. And one of the things that I will always be grateful about Bill Wilson and about recovery is that I'm the type of person who needed that type of help. Now, I know there's a lot of people who come to us in AA who stop drinking, and for some unknown reason, they don't need to go to step meetings to find a good life that seems to enjoy their sobriety. But I never knew how to live sober, you know, and I don't say that I am an alcoholic because the way I felt. I've been sober a long time, and I know a lot of people walking around in the streets today felt the way I did for years, and some of them poor bastards don't even know enough to drink. You know? I'm an alcoholic because for some reason I took a drink, and I loved it. And I think what I loved about drinking was that it made me feel that I belonged there. I could talk to people. I lost this feeling about, you know, not talking good English. I lost this feeling about not having an education. I even forgot that I washed dishes. When I drank, I really could talk to other people, and this place where I was, if you give this girl $5, she would sing a song that you want, and then you could dance around. You ask a girl for a dance, and you dance around. I was there about an hour, and I knew what was going on. And I got up, and I gave her $5. And I asked her to sing the song that I wanted to hear, and I did like other people did. I looked around, and I picked me a best-looking girl in the joint. At least I thought she was a best-looking girl in the joint, but not necessarily so. Because alcohol also affects your vision. At least it affected mine, because, you know, I would meet a girl and I'd fall in love and talk about marriage. I could see stars in her eyes till the next morning. And I'd say, holy Christ, you were so cute last night. And so, but the beautiful thing about it, few more drinks and I'm in love all over again. And someone said, John, why do you drink? Very difficult to explain. But I think the illness is that if someone came to me that night and said, John, you're an alcoholic, of course, they would have told me, they'll be telling me the truth. But you know, you and I, gosh, let's face it, maybe we're alcoholics, but in this room, there's plenty of brains. As many brains as you'll find anywhere else. Our problem is not the lack of brains. You know? Although sometimes some people think of it otherwise. But we're not. And I would have never believed, in no way in the world I could believe that I was an alcoholic then. No more would I believe when I came to AA that someday I'll be standing up here and be so grateful that I can share my life, not because I become rich or because I talk better English or good English or have an education, but because it's certainly something that I believe in life, which is something I have never had before. I tried to stop drinking. In my days, there were no detoxes, so the bums used to say to me, John, you look sick. Why don't you take a pledge? And you know, when a bum tells you you look sick, you're sick. And we all had one priest that we went to. They knew us. I remember one time I was so remorse and guilty, I wanted to take a pledge for a year. I said, John, you know, he knows me by name. Why don't you try it for 30 days, he said. Guess he didn't like the way I smelled. But I only lasted 200 yards. It really never worked. And when I was in a mission that night, when I came to see me, I have tried different things. I remember one night I was in a mission, attending a services because I wanted a bed. And a fella get up and he said that for many years, he was a bum just like us. And he said, right in this mission one night, he said, I accepted Christ as my personal savior, he said. And since then, I have a new home. I got married. I just bought a new station wagon. And I work nights. And then he says, any of you bums can do the same thing. Nice fella. So I've always wanted a nice car and a nice girl and a nice home. I never crazy about work. But I move forward anyway. But I knew nothing about Christ. You know, I spent 4 years in lumber camp, and I used to listen to lumberjacks talking about him. And by the time they finished with him, you wouldn't believe him either. So I'm kneeling down, and this guy kneeled next to me, and he said, son, you're saved. Well, next morning, I'm facing a judge. Now, I don't know about you, but it gives you that feeling that you're not safe. He calls me John. He said, John, do you know how many times you've been up here? Now, you know, when you travel the way I do, you don't keep track of everything. He said, John, you've been up here 43 times. And I said, Christ, no wonder he looks familiar. Then he tells me about the Fayette Park and Indians. He said, that's for the decent people to go there on Sundays. It's not for people like you. And then he took his glasses off and he gave me 6 months in Jimmyville. And I really thought he didn't like Indians, you know, because he was bald-headed. Now, I figured maybe my great-grandfather got to him first before I did. So I think we all tried. I remember Tom in the mission was a man who always wanted to help me because he believed what he was doing. He called me in his office one time and he said, you know, there's a fellow by the name of Billy Graham coming to this city. He said, this man helps a lot of people. You go to the War Memorial, he said, every night and listen to this man, and he will help you. And I did. And I got sober. I must have been sober for 3 weeks. And Billy Graham left. And I got drunk. And next morning, I was facing a judge, and he gave me 3 months, and I said, I'll never listen to Billy Graham again. So I tried everything in my own way when I was invited to come here, and as I was listening to a lady judge, I felt so distant. And all I wanted to do was to get my donuts and leave. And that's what I was doing. After I get my donuts, I was leaving. And this lawyer, he would shake hands to everyone who was leaving. And he put his arms around me and he says to me, before you leave, meet some of my friends. I understand that now much better and then, because in my recovery, I go to the step meetings because I still cannot read enough to learn. But in my area, they have step meetings, and what they do, they would read the step, the whole step, pages of it. And then you have people from different walks of life who would express their ideas and their insight as to what step means to them. And there, I learned to see things that I needed to see so that I can live a better life. And in 11th step, there is a prayer of St. Francis. And among other things that St. Francis talks about, he said, Lord, I pray that I may understand rather than to be understood. And every time I hear that, I remember about the lawyer. And God knows I needed someone to understand me. I didn't belong there, and yet I needed to. And what his friends did to me was simply talk to me. And I don't know, I guess, after a while, when you're a bum for so long, nobody talks to you anymore. Not with feelings of caring or feeling of love. They seem to talk to you like you're down there. And you understand that and give you that look that you always, they're always better than you are. And I don't know what it was me, but in a mission, you know, in Thanksgiving, they would feed all the bums and 200 of us, and Tom would get up and say, we praise God today because we have been able to feed 200 unfortunate people. And we're all on one side, and they're all on the other side, and we never met. God was on that side, and I've never felt. Never felt. But people in AA touched me, and it's important, you see, because I needed to come back. You know, I needed to learn difference between what I thought and the truth about me. I thought I was no good. I thought the judge was right, that the Fayette Park is for the decent people. I thought that if you have no education and if you cannot read and write, you're no good. But you know something. When Kathy and I left yesterday, we left a 14-room house. We have a couple of new cars, you know, live like a white man, dollar down and dollar away. Christ, we even had a dishwasher one time. But I came back, and then when I speak, and that, you know, little prayers tell us that the greatest thing that some people leave in life is themselves. One of them is my sponsor, Pat. I met my sponsor, Pat, in AA. I knew Pat. I never liked him. Pat was bum longer than I am. The difference was he had a degree. And I used to say, there is nothing worse than a bum with a degree. Unbeknown to us, periodically he disappeared and joined AA, but never could stay sober. And I was in Central Group one night when Pat walked in all dressed up with a girl, and he comes to me and he said, John, I'm your sponsor. And I said, here we go again. And he had a new car. And he picked me up every night in a mission and bring me to a meeting. He used to bring me half a sandwich. He used to say he can only eat Afifen. I didn't know any difference because, you know, a part of our sickness that Bill Wilson said, I call it being sensitive because it's, I can handle it better. But Bill Wilson said, I'm self-centered. Which means that I don't see people, what they're doing in life. And I don't really care for people. I'm too obsessed with myself. I have the worst kind of a sickness, you see. Almost impossible to have a healthy relationship with another human being. And I don't even know it. And I don't even know someone who's doing something for me. I would rather attack them. Pat, someone said years later, Pat never eats sandwiches. And of course, Pat don't eat sandwiches. But, you know, it's for me to stand up here and tell you about my 14-room house, about my wife, and it's because there have been some people who truly understand St. Francis when he said, Lord, I pray that I may love rather than to seek love. Pat, for some reason, although he died drunk 17 years later, he gave me something that I've always talked about when I speak. Because I really cared, I really understood, and I'm really grateful that he picked me up every night and bring me a sandwich. Now, I had a friend, Gibby, who is dead now. He was a professor in English. I'm in the remodeling business, and I was working at his house. And I was telling Gibby about Pat that I never thanked him because I never was well enough, you know, to really understand what he did. And Gibby says to me, that's not the way it works, John. Pat taught you something. Pass it on. Keep it alive. And now that I understand it, I feel much better. But Pat used to say to me, John, you can't stay sober and live in a mission with those bums. But I felt secure in a mission. I've been in mission for years. You know. But I think God must have been on his side because one night, mission burned down. And Pat said that was the grace of God. 3 o'clock in the morning, the only person I knew was Pat. I knocked at the door. I slept on the floor. And next day, he brought me to the 12-step house. And they gave me a job. They paid me $7.50 a week, and I could stay there. And my job was to wash and wax floors, to make coffee, answer the telephone, and wash dishes. But I get kicked out over there because I was young, and you know, Father Martin talks about difference between reacting in life and responding. And a person who don't believe in anything, he reacts with his feelings, and because you have nothing that you believe in. Well, you know, that's the way I lived all my life, and I still do sometimes. But some lady called one night which I have never met. Her name was Han, but she was drunk. And I told his people who come to this place playing cards every night that there was a woman who needed help. And when they find out who she was, they told me that she's been around for years and that's all she does is use people in AA. And I thought it was wrong. And I know it was wrong because in AA we talk about caring. You know, we talk about love. And if you're on reserve, it's only those who are sober. What kind of caring and what kind of love did you have? So I knew I was right. My problem, what do I do when I'm right? People who don't believe in themselves, they will try to prove they're right. So you cause more trouble, although you're right, but you cause trouble because you don't have something to walk with. And I didn't understand. And you know, so I do what I always do when people hurt my feelings. I upset the table. And I punch one of them right in his mouth. And I knocked him down right on his ass. And that was my first 12-step call. But they throw me out. 3 o'clock in the morning, I'm walking down to Fayette Street, but they called Pat, or somebody called Pat. And he picked me up. And he brought me to Major Harvey in Salvation Army. And I was with him for 2.5 years. When I was sober 5 years, I was 33 years old. I was still in skids. I had a terrible time. Because, you see, I couldn't read and write, and they had no step meetings, and I didn't understand the recovery. All, you know, it's good to identify, you know, as today I was walking down the beach. And the difference is, in my time, there was no one to go and tell them how it feels to be alone. And how it feels when you're rejected, either from your own people or from any other people. Maybe even not rejected, but I felt it. That nobody understands. They cause you to feel that you're dirty, that you're different. Nobody listens. And I wouldn't dare tell anyone because I was ashamed of my own feelings. I understood. And as I was walking the beach, I couldn't help but to think that although identifying is not a principle of recovery, but it is certainly a first step where you draw strength from understanding that you're not alone and you can share. Now, I think recovery starts in coming to believe in the second step. That's my opinion. But I felt how wonderful it was to be here and to be for young people to be able to sit there and to be able to express some of the feelings, and that makes this conference worthwhile. I have never had that. I left Syracuse. I was 33 years old, and I walked out of there because I couldn't identify anymore. You know, people sober 2 years in AA, you know, they get up here and they talk about getting their driving license back. I haven't got mine yet. And some people talk about back in a big bed or getting divorced and married again. I haven't even married yet. I'm sleeping in an empty car with a white cap that nobody wants. Nothing you can do with white cat, no matter what state of mind that you're in. You know? And you don't share it, right? You don't tell anybody, I'm sober 5 years and I'm sleeping in the car. And so if you don't grow in AA, you grow out. You don't belong anymore. And I needed to grow, but I didn't know how. I walked out of there, and I arrived in Marlboro, Mass, 1 o'clock in the morning. And I've never been there before. And I seen a hotel in Main Street. I slept there in the men's room. Another important person I met in my sobriety was Paul, who owned the restaurant. Saturday night, I met him. He said, John, they're starting a new group in Worcester. Monday, would you like to go? I said, sure, because I always loved AA. I went to meetings almost every night. And I still do. I am 27 years sober, and I don't think I have missed more than 5 meetings. The only time I miss meetings is when Kathy and I are on vacation. I love it. You know? And the greatest thing it has allowed me to do for me, the greatest thing is to be able to stand up here and enjoy with these people, not to feel guilty because there's father sitting over there. I talk about God, not because what I learned in the program and someone who's a director in this big place. It's good to sit there and to feel that you're part of something rather than feeling that you don't belong here because someone smarter than you are. It's not a question of being smart, but it's a question of believing, I think. You know? So we went to the, 21 years ago, they started a first step meeting in Worcester. 21 years ago, they never had them before. And I there on my first meeting. Talk about the grace of God, huh? And what they did there, 3 months later, and I'm the type of person who definitely has problem of rejection. The reason I never been successful, because I don't like to fail. People who cannot fail don't succeed. And so I said to her, you make sure that I know all the questions before I go there. He said, John, don't worry about it. You're all right. I went over there and I got me in that little room and this guy asked me only 2 questions. And I didn't want to leave. I was insulted. I said to myself, what in the hell's use to have all this education and nobody gives a damn? And Paul came to see me with an 11-passenger station wagon. You know what, the seats in the back? A black one. He said, John, for $750, this car is yours. But I didn't have money. He said, ask the lady upstairs. I was painting a house. I needed $250 for the down payment, and she gave me. And a lady who belonged to Marlboro Group co-signed for me. And here I was in my 5th year sobriety. I was president in my own company. I had a driving license and 11-passenger station wagon. So I decided to find me a girlfriend. But I had 4 teeth in front missing. And I felt I'm the type of person you couldn't find a type of a girl that I was looking for with 4 teeth missing. You know, in Syracuse, New York, there is a bar room they call Smitty's. That's where all the New York Indians drink. I'm a Mi'kmaq Indian. I don't drink in Smitty's because Mi'kmaq Indians and New York Indians don't communicate too well. And every once in a while, about 20 of us Mi'kmaqs would get drunk. And we would go to Smitty's. And we would communicate. You know. And one day, I was walking by Smitty's. And I was feeling pretty good. I have just unloading a boxcar, and I had leather gloves on. I had $20, and I felt good. $20 for a bum, it's really a lot of money. And I was walking by Smitty's, and somebody opened the door, and they threw this guy out, and that's where I met Smiley. The Indians threw him out. Smiley is a little Irishman with a degree. He lost one lung. He only weighs about 90 pounds. So I picked him up, and I said to him, what in the hell's wrong with you? He said, it's those Indians in there. I said, they can't do that to you. He said, no, they can. I said, what do you say you and I go in there? We'll clean them up. He looks at me, he said, it's a good idea. Well, by the Jesus, it wasn't a good idea. You know, I walk up in the general hospital, I lost 4 teeth, and Smiley said in there without scratch. You know, he's so damn skinny, Indians wouldn't hit him. I met a dentist one night in AA. He was new. I said to him, I'm looking for help. What can I do for you, he said. Well, I said, I'm looking for a girlfriend. But I have this fourth date missing. And then he gave me his card. And I went to see him. Well, he said, John, this will take about 3 months. And I didn't realize that, you know, you get what you need and not what you want. Or you get what you get. But, you know, in recovery, you learn to develop, part of recovery is discipline, patience. And, you know, it's not something that I do easily. But I went to see him when I'm supposed to see him, and 3 months later, I got this teat I have. And I was so happy, I rushed home, and I looked in the mirror, and I laughed for 2 hours. I met a woman in AA who run the Faith House, Home of Alcoholic Women. She said, John, I'm told you have a car. I said, 11 passengers. She said, I have 9 girls. I'm looking for someone to bring these girls to a meeting. She run a home called Faith House, Home of Alcoholic Women. Said, would you like to have a job? I said, I'll be very happy to. That's where I met my wife, Kathy. I bring her to meetings, and on our way back, I ask her if she wanted to go out on dates. And she said no. And what bothered me was she didn't even think. And that's a total rejection. And if you know anything about rejection, you know what I mean. Someone thinks a little bit, it helps you a little bit. And on my way home, hey, I'm sober 5 years. I start thinking. I said to myself, who in the hell she thinks she is? Here she is with all this woman. They don't have anything. And here I am. I'm president in my own company. I ride around with 11 passenger station wagon. And I got a new set of teeth. Who the hell wants her anyway? So next Thursday night, I picked the girls again, and we went to a meeting. And on our way back, I asked her if she wanted to go to a show in Boston, and she said yes. We went to a show in Boston, and on our way back, I asked her to marry me. She said, but I don't know you. And I said, it's all right. We still have 5 miles to go. We'll get acquainted. So we got married. Nobody showed up. Only 6 people. You know, you talk about caring. My daughter got married a couple of weeks. Second oldest daughter got married a couple of weeks ago. You know, we had a big wedding. Believe it or not, I wear that funny suit. You wouldn't believe it. And my ancestors see me wearing that thing. There wasn't one feather in the entire wedding. And after the wedding, my daughter went to Paris. Kathy and I got married. Only 6 people showed up. We had $85. Now, you know, we talk about caring, this book, this thing that maybe somebody read later. Talk about caring. You talk about love. You talk something greater than wealth. You talk about something greater than other things, which is love. You know, so Kathy and I were blessed. One of the most important things in life, we loved each other. Yeah. But we had that, and we always had that. But we went on our honeymoon. And we came back with $35. We moved into a 3-room apartment that we'd pay $13.50 a week. When Kathy and I walked into an apartment, The only thing we had was coffee table that was given to us from Faith House, because the man who ran the Faith House used to make furniture. Kathy and I had absolutely nothing, except the most important thing was each other. We had no furniture, we had no television, we had no bed, we had no blankets. She says to me, "Where are you going to sleep?" I said, "We sleep on the floor." Now, you know that you also can have fun on the floor. I remember I spoke in Westchester County one time, and I mentioned the fact you can have a lot of fun on the floor. There are rich people over there wear jewelry. And it's real. And after the meeting, this rich lady came to me and she said, "Young man, I don't know how much fun you can have on the floor," she said, "but I know you can have a lot of fun in the Oriental rug." I said, "Thank God you identified." Anyway, while we lay on the floor, I said to Kathy, "You know, I would like to have a boy because I'm the only one left." And this Christmas, Kathy was in a hospital. I went out and bought a few things, a few feathers for the boy. She calls me up and she's crying. She said, "Honey, it's a girl." I said, "You got to be kidding." But she wasn't, because I went to see her the next morning. It was a girl. But next Christmas came along and my wife was in there again, and she calls me up and she's still crying. She said, "Honey, it's the girl." But by this time, you know, they say experience is a great teacher. I went over to see her and said to her, "Don't worry about it. Just have an open mind and we'll try again." I learned that in the program. Next Christmas came along and she was in there again, and I received a call and she's still crying. This time it's twin boys. So I've always said, God will give you what you want, providing that you're willing to work hard for it. And 2 years later, the girl came along, Rita. She's now 17 years old. And then a couple of years later, the boy came along, 15 years old. And that's my story. Two girls married, one of twins going to college. Now, that's something, huh? You know, there's no end to recovery. Because it not only helps you keep your sober, but you recognize the value of human life. You learn to, who would ever believe when I was 33 years old, sleeping in a men's room, 5 years sober, who would ever believe that a man like me would have such a beautiful family, you know? And my wife, I worked and she raised him. And, you know, we were talking about our kids because it's important to us. We leave them. We don't have problem with our kids. You know, drugs or drinking. We leave them. They take care of the house. The 17-year-old taking care of the house now, an 18-year-old son. We don't have problems. And they've never been hungry. And I thank God for that, because, you know, when I was a kid, when my family was sick, they would cry a lot, and my mother would send me to an agent, he wrapped the note with a sweater. It was 14 miles I walked, one way. Those were the difficult days. And you know, something about fear always stays with you. My mother used to say, "John, try to get some food." But there were no food, you know. You have to come home. I don't know what bothered me worse. Come home without food or begging. There isn't much freedom or honor in begging. And if there is only one trouble I had in my family, was the fear that my children or my wife would go hungry. And you know, to be able to stand up here and say that I thank God that my children never experience hunger, you know, and my wife or myself. I don't know how much you can say about the program. Some of us have better words in putting it together, and when they do, you can see the value, you can see how wonderful AA is. But in my own way, I'm very grateful that I'm given the honor to be asked to come here and to be free and to enjoy sitting here in a head table and to be able to tell you the truth, not perhaps the words that I could use, but the truth itself, it's more important than any right words you can choose to explain it. It is what we call the language of the heart. It certainly has been for us and for me something that has saved my life. Thank you very much.